A Woman of No Importance, Act 2. The drawing room at Hunstanton Manor after dinner. The lamps are lit, the ladies seated on sofas.
What a comfort it is to have got rid of the men for a little.
Yes, men persecute us dreadfully, don't they?
Persecute us? I wish they did.
My dear!
The annoying thing is that the wretches can be perfectly happy without us. That is why I think it is every woman's duty never to leave them alone for a single moment, except during this short breathing space after dinner, without which I believe we poor women would be absolutely worn to shadows.
Servants enter and serve coffee to the ladies.
Worn to shadows, dear?
Yes, Lady Hunstanton. It is such a strain keeping men up to the mark. They are always trying to escape from us.
It seems to me that it is we who are always trying to escape from them. Men are so very, very heartless. They know their power and use it.
What stuff and nonsense all this about men is. The thing to do is to keep men in their proper place.
But what is their proper place, Lady Caroline?
Looking after their wives, Mrs. Allenby.
Really? And if they're not married?
If they are not married, they should be looking for a wife. It's perfectly scandalous the amount of bachelors are going about society. There should be a law passed to compel them all to marry within 12 months.
Lady Stutfield refuses the offered coffee.
But if they're in love with someone who perhaps is tied to another?
In that case, Lady Stutfield, they should be married off in a week to some plain, respectable girl in order to teach them not to meddle with other people's property.
I don't think that we should ever be spoken of as other people's property. All men are married women's property. That is the only true definition of what married women's property really is. But we don't belong to anyone.
Oh, I am so very, very glad to hear you say so.
But do you really think, dear Caroline, that legislation would improve matters in any way? I am told that nowadays all the married men live like bachelors, and all the bachelors like married men.
I certainly never know one from the other.
Oh, I think one can always know at once whether a man has home claims upon his life or not. I have noticed a very, very sad expression in the eyes of so many married men.
All that I have noticed is that they are horribly tedious when they are good husbands and abominably conceited when they are not.
Well, I suppose the type of husband has completely changed since my young days, but I'm bound to state that poor dear Hunstanton was the most delightful of creatures and as good as gold.
My husband is a sort of promissory note. I'm tired of meeting him.
But you renew him from time to time, don't you?
Oh no, Lady Caroline. I've only had one husband as yet. I suppose you look upon me as quite an amateur.
With your views on life, I wonder you married at all.
So do I.
My dear child, I believe you are really very happy in your married life, but that you like to hide your happiness from others.
I assure you, I was horribly deceived in earnest.
Oh, I hope not, dear. I knew his mother quite well. She was a Stratton, Caroline, one of Lord Crowland's daughters.
Victoria Stratton. I remember her perfectly. A silly, fair-haired woman with no chin.
Ah, Ernest has a chin. He has a very strong chin. A square chin. Ernest's chin is far too square.
But do you really think a man's chin can be too square? I think a man should look very, very strong, and that his chin should be quite, quite square.
Then you should certainly know Ernest, Lady Stutfield. It is only fair to tell you beforehand he's got no conversation at all.
I adore silent men.
Oh! Ernest isn't silent. He talks the whole time. But he's got no conversation. What he talks about, I don't know. I haven't listened to him for years.
Have you never forgiven him then? How sad that seems. But all life is very, very sad, is it not?
Life, Lady Stutfield, is simply a mauvais quart d'heure made up of exquisite moments.
Yes. Yes, there are moments, certainly. But was it something very, very wrong that Mr. Allenby did? Did he become angry with you and say anything that was unkind or true?
Oh, dear, no. Ernest is invariably calm. That is one of the reasons he always gets on my nerves. Nothing is so aggravating as calmness. There is something positively brutal about the good temper of most modern men. I wonder we women stand it as well as we do.
Yes, men's good temper shows they are not as sensitive as we are, not so finely strung. It makes a great barrier often between husband and wife, does it not? But I would so much like to know what was the wrong thing Mr. Allenby did.
Well, I will tell you, if you solemnly promise to tell everybody else.
Thank you. I will make a point of repeating it.
When Ernest and I were engaged, he swore to me positively on his knees that he had never loved anyone before in the whole course of his life. I was very young at the time, so I didn't believe him, I needn't tell you. Unfortunately, however, I made no inquiries of any kind till after I had been actually married 4 or 5 months. I found out then that what he had told me was perfectly true, and that sort of thing makes a man so absolutely uninteresting.
My dear!
Men always want to be a woman's first love. That is their clumsy vanity. We women have a more subtle instinct about things. What we like is to be a man's last romance.
I see what you mean. It's very, very beautiful.
You mean to tell me that you won't forgive your husband because he never loved anyone else? Oh, did you ever hear such a thing, Caroline? I am quite surprised.
Oh, women have become so highly educated, Jane, that nothing should surprise us nowadays, except happy marriages. They apparently are getting remarkably rare.
Oh, they're quite out of date.
Except among the middle classes, I have been told.
How like the middle classes?
Yes, is it not? Very, very like them.
If what you tell us about the middle classes is true, Lady Stutfield, it redounds greatly to their credit. It is much to be regretted that in our rank of life, the wife should be so persistently frivolous, under the impression, apparently, that it is the proper thing to be. It is to that I attribute the unhappiness of so many marriages we all know of in society.
Do you know, Lady Caroline, I don't think the frivolity of the wife has ever anything to do with it. More marriages are ruined nowadays by the common sense of the husband than by anything else. How can a woman be expected to be happy with a man who insists on treating her as if she were a perfectly rational being?
My dear!
Man, poor, awkward, reliable, necessary man, belongs to a sex that has been rational for millions and millions of years. He can't help himself. It is in his race. The history of woman is very different. We have always been picturesque protests against the mere existence of common sense. We saw its dangers from the first.
Yes, the common sense of husbands is certainly most, most trying. Do tell me your conception of the ideal husband. I think it would be so very, very helpful.
The ideal husband? There couldn't be such a thing. The institution is wrong.
The ideal man, then, in his relation to us.
He would probably be extremely realistic.
Ideal man. Oh, the ideal man should talk to us as if we were goddesses and treat us as if we were children. He should refuse all our serious requests and gratify every one of our whims. He should encourage us to have caprices and forbid us to have missions. He should always say much more than he means and always mean much more than he says.
But how could he do both, dear?
He should never run down other pretty women. That would show he had no taste, or make one suspect that he had too much. No, he should be nice about them all, but say that somehow they don't attract him.
Yes, that is always very, very pleasant to hear about other women.
If we ask him a question about anything, he should give us an answer all about ourselves. He should invariably praise us for whatever qualities he knows we haven't got. But he should be pitiless, quite pitiless, in reproaching us for the virtues that we have never dreamed of possessing. He should never believe that we know the use of useful things. That would be unforgivable. But he should shower on us everything we don't want.
Far as I can see, he is to do nothing but pay bills and compliments.
He should persistently compromise us in public and treat us with absolute respect when we are alone. And yet, he should be always ready to have a perfectly terrible scene whenever we want one, and to become miserable, absolutely miserable, at a moment's notice, and to overwhelm us with just reproaches in less than 20 minutes, and to be positively violent at the end of half an hour, and to leave us forever at 7:45 when we have to go and dress for dinner, and when, after that, one has seen him for really the last time, and he has refused to take back the little things he has given one, and promised never to communicate with one again, or to write one any foolish letters. He should be perfectly broken-hearted, and telegraph to one all day long, and send one little notes every half hour by a private hansom, and dine quite alone at the club, so that everyone should know how unhappy he was. And after a whole dreadful week, during which one has gone about everywhere with one's husband, just to show how absolutely lonely one was, he may be given a third, last parting in the evening. And then, if his conduct has been quite irreproachable, and one has behaved really badly to him, he should be allowed to admit that he has been entirely in the wrong. And when he has admitted that, it becomes a woman's duty to forgive. And one can do it all over again from the beginning with variations.
How clever you are, my dear. You never mean a single word you say.
Thank you, thank you. It has been quite entrancing. I must try and remember it all. There are such a number of details that are so very, very important.
But you have not told us as yet what the reward of the ideal man is to be.
His reward?
Oh,
infinite expectation. That is quite enough for him.
But men are so terribly, terribly exacting, are they not?
That makes no matter. One should never surrender.
Not even to the ideal man?
Certainly not to him. Unless, of course, one wants to grow tired of him.
Oh, yes, I see that. It is very, very helpful. Do you think, Mrs. Allenby, I shall ever meet the ideal man? Or are there more than one?
There are just four in London, Lady Stutfield.
Oh, my dear.
What has happened? Do tell me.
I had completely forgotten that the American young lady has been in the room all the time. I think I'd better go over and talk to her. Dear Miss Worsley, how quiet you've been in your nice little corner all this time. I suppose you've been reading a book. There are so many books here in the library.
No, I've been listening to the conversation.